Hello and welcome to the Leap of Faith. Well, you join us in the rehearsal rooms of the Palestrina Choir as the boys take a well-earned break from rehearsals for the world premiere of a Mass in the Irish language. Afrin by Kevin O'Connell, which will be first heard in full this Sunday at 11 o'clock Mass at the Pro Cathedral in Dublin. Composer and Éist Dhána member Kevin O'Connell was commissioned to compose an Irish Mass that sets four prayers from the Ordinary, Kyrie, Gloria, Sanctus and Agnus Dei, and will be premiered during Bliain na Gaeilge. This coincides with the publication of the new edition of An Leabhar Afrin Románach in December 2017, and that's after 14 years of work. Well, we're here tonight to meet some of the key people behind the event and to eavesdrop on the rehearsals.
My name is Linda O'Shea Farron, and I'm one of the commissioners of seven commissioning families of Afrin by Kevin O'Connell, which is a song mass in the Irish language.
Linda, as the piece has now been commissioned and composed and is about to be performed, how does it feel for the seven families involved?
I cannot describe the level of excitement. We're almost giddy with excitement about it. I suppose part of it is that it's seven families. We all know each other extremely well since college, which is now quite some time ago, mostly UCD based. And I'm from UCC myself, but I married a UCD man. Mm-hmm. And the connections were made in UCD. There's no question about that. And we are friends who've stayed together all these years, and we couldn't be happier. My son is flying in from London. One of the other families, their son is flying in from Brussels. They're coming home for the world premiere
of a family event as much as anything else. Now, Linda, an unusual idea for families to commission a piece of music, or is it?
In some cases, I suppose it is unusual if you don't know very many composers, but the Contemporary Music Centre is there to help anybody who has any idea at all that they may like to commission a piece, however small or great. I happen to work there at the moment, and that's why I suppose it occurred to me. And it's in speaking to friends of mine that the idea arose, because they were curious to know what I do every day when I go into the Contemporary Music Centre. I was explaining about composers and how they get their work. And sometimes it's by public commission. So, for example, the Arts Council might, or the National Symphony Orchestra, or some major organisation. Sometimes it's a corporation that wants it. But what we're doing here, I suppose, is possibly the least common, and that is ordinary individuals grouping together and coming up with an idea. And Bliain na Gaeilge 2018, I suppose, was the trigger for us.
So because it was Bliain na Gaeilge, the idea was a new composition of a Mass in Irish.
Well, we all are very familiar with Seán Ó Riadh's Mass, and a lot of the families that have gotten together, some of their children were educated in Gaelscoileanna, all interested in music, mostly involved in the Catholic religion in some way or other. And Ó Riadh's Mass seemed like, Bliain na Gaeilge seemed like a very good time to think about a new Mass.
On a little technicality, who actually owns the composition?
Well, generally speaking, a composer owns the rights to their own music. But in theory, you could buy it if you were, for example, a film, or you're a corporation and you want it for corporate purposes for your ads or whatever. But then you would pay an awful lot more for the commission, because then the composer would have no rights. But having said that, our purpose here is to have it sung, in particular by children in schools. That's why it's for mixed choir, for boys and girls. And we feel that there is probably plenty of appetite out there for a new Mass, sung Mass in the Irish language, by children in schools, families and churches. And so we don't want to own it. We want the composer to benefit from this, and we want it sung as often as possible.
But also you've got access to some wonderful performers in this particular case too.
Well, that's a very, very good point, Michael. If you commission a piece, let's say for solo piano, you probably have a pianist in mind, or the pianist could be related to you, or you could be the pianist yourself. But if you're commissioning a choral work or something big like an orchestral work, getting that performed is a major exercise. But if you commission a Mass, as we are doing, and in particular you liaise with a composer who already has an existing relationship with the choral director, in this case, Blanid Murphy, who's the choral director of the Palestrina Choir. The Palestrina Choir is a magnificent choir of very high calibre. And by commissioning a Mass for them, I suppose we ensured it would get a world premiere, and that's now getting very, very close, happening on Sunday.
Now, take us through the process of commissioning, because I'm wondering and curious as to what input you have as a commissioner and at what stage there's feedback or liaison between you and the composer.
Well, you have all the power, if you like, in the sense that you come up with your own concept, usually, although you could just commission a piece in a vacuum. But generally speaking, you have an idea. It could be the birth of a child. It could be a community that wins the Tidy Towns. It could be a band that starts up in Carlow and they decide to commission a piece. But you all usually have an idea for the piece. You also will inevitably have a price limit, a budget of some sort. And the guidelines on the Contemporary Music Centre's website, they give a very good feel for the kind of price range. And it is a range, I have to warn. It's not a set fee because that would be anti-competitive, but we have guidelines.
And can you give us an idea of the pool of composers that you're calling from? Is there lots of choice there?
It's an incredible pool. And I think this is not as well known as it ought to be. We have in excess of 200 living composers in Ireland, well in excess of 200. And they're not all registered with us, but we ourselves already have more than 200. CMC is a 32-county organisation. We represent composers all over the island of Ireland. We also represent people who are born anywhere in the world, but who actually live in Ireland. And in addition, we represent anybody who was born in Ireland and no longer lives here. So obviously we have composers posted all over the world in diaspora, like the traditional Irish scenario. But we also have a huge number of composers who were not born here, but who have made their lives here and have contributed enormously to the canon of music in Ireland.
Linda, we're here in the rehearsal rooms where the Palestrina Choir are practising, and of course it's in the Irish language. How about the idea of it being accessible to a general population? Was there anything driving that?
We had some parameters, and very, very clear parameter was that the music would be capable of being sung in regular school choirs, probably high calibre school choir, but not necessarily a choir of the calibre of the Palestrina with the full organ and everything. And Kevin has composed it in a manner that it should be accessible to good quality amateur choirs. And that's because we want it sung. And obviously because it's in the Irish language, we're hoping that that will reach into all of the counties of Ireland. And, for example, the composer Kevin O'Connell was born in Derry, so he wouldn't have fluent Irish. But having said that, he was able to work with the language to compose the Afrin in the first place. I'm sure it will be sophisticated music. Obviously, I haven't heard it myself yet. But part of our brief to Kevin O'Connell, the composer, was that it would be capable of being sung by choirs that wouldn't have the same training that the Palestrina Choir has.
And I'm genuinely surprised, as you say to me, that you haven't heard it yet. And we're here a couple of days in advance of its first performance. Really, what is that going to be like?
I suppose like the birth of a baby. You know, you carry the baby around for 9 months and you still don't know what the baby's going to look like. But I think that's the reason, because it's a choral piece. If this was, let's say, for a piano solo, we might have had a sneak preview of the score. But none of us has the choir at our disposal. So we can't possibly hear. I think the composer might be hearing it for the first time at a rehearsal tonight.
Yes, Linda, at while we may not be able to actually hear it in its entirety, which you will for the first time on Sunday at 11 o'clock, we are hearing little snippets of it in the background as the rehearsals get underway.
Yes, and it sounds wonderful already.
My name's Blondin Murphy and I'm director of the choirs at the Pro-Cathedral, St Mary's Pro-Cathedral in Marlborough Street.
Blondin, when you're faced with a new piece of music, especially commissioned, what are the challenges?
Well, it's a whole different sound world that's, you know, never been explored really until you see the work. And there's always contemporary music, a living composer, he's always going to be stretching the boundaries and, you know, trying to be as high as possible and different sonorities. And first of all, it's to win the boys, the girls, the choir over. And then it's to really get down to some of the very tricky parts. And then I feel after we've worked on it for a few rehearsals now that there's quite a lot of excitement. The sort of the boys and the girls have got the sense of what the spectrum of sound is going to be. So it's challenging, but very rewarding.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit more, because it is, of course, in Irish, and I'm sure the choir sing in many different languages. But were there any specific requirements around phrasing and tone when it comes to the Irish language?
In Irish, you have, often have those vowels that are quite multiple vowels. So it's how you get that so that you're able to hold a long note and those little small things. But I think we've conquered some of those issues. And hopefully it'll come across very well, the Irish.
What about the general excitement of the delivery of it on Sunday at 11 o'clock?
Well, it'll be quite pressurising because it's obviously, it's a tricky work. There's a lot of people coming, you know, to get it together with the organ. There's a lot of little florid solos with a lot of boy soloists and so on. So all those factors have to come together. But I feel they'll will rise to the occasion.
Now, watching the boys earlier on, the image of herding mice at crossroads came into my head because they're running around the place. They're full of excitement. How do you channel that into something as important as a premiere?
Well, I think they're amazing because they're just normal, regular kids. And yet when it comes down to it, they're very musical children and they've disciplined in having to very quickly grasp new music. And I think they're able to channel all that energy into working very hard for the most part. But I think everybody kind of rallies around something like this. And I do think that they are very much looking forward to it.
Talk a little bit more about the two choirs and the progression for people as they enter, perform and eventually lead, because I presume they grow older.
Yeah, we take children usually between 7 and 8 and they start have a year's training and they then stay for many years in the choir. The boys finish at the end of second year and the girls at the end of third year. And we have children from all over Dublin, inner city schools, right north, south. We have really quite an eclectic group of people here.
We heard this evening that the composer hasn't actually heard the piece in full yet. That carries a little bit of extra responsibility for you too, not only for the commissioners, but for the composer to hear this for the very first time on Sunday.
Well, I agree. When he first walked into the rehearsal room, I thought, oh my God, are we going to be up to, you know, standard here? But then I relaxed because I know him quite well. And I always feel he listens very deeply when he's hearing a work. In a way, it relaxes you, and I feel the choir then starts to listen more. So in actual fact, having got over the hurdle of him coming in, I was then fine.
Is the piece complex? Is it accessible? How has it actually been for you to bring it across from notes on a page to two full choirs?
Well, when I first started with it, I thought it was quite complex. And I thought, we're going to have a lot of work ahead of us here. But in actual fact, as it's gone on, I like the structure. I like the way it's done. It's demanding, but it's not exceptional. So you feel it's attainable. And yet you feel you're being pushed beyond what you might normally do. So in a way, it's the best of both worlds. And I hope that's what I hope we can do on Sunday, that make it seem accessible and yet be able to perform as a cathedral choir and really display great virtuosity, I hope.
For you as the director of the choir, you have a palette of colours, going from the very young voices to older voices. Are you able to use all of those in this particular piece?
Yes, I think you can. You need the older voices to carry some of the lines, and yet you need the great youthful, lovely, fresh sounds of some of the very young boys and girls. So I think, it combines a lot of sounds, and together it produces, hopefully, a very powerful message.
My name is Kevin O'Connell. I'm the composer of this Mass in Irish, and it's the second Mass I have written for the Palestrina Choir and Blanid Murphy, their director. The first was in Latin.
Now, what is the level of touch? Is it a light touch or is there a firm hand on it for you as the composer? Are you left to your own devices?
To some extent, you are left to your own devices because the composer is master of his or her own destiny where a composition is concerned. But I will say that when it is a Mass, and particularly a liturgical Mass like this, which has to be incorporated into the actual celebration of the Mass, there are a whole series of other factors that come into play. You can't set the Gloria, for example, which is quite a long prayer. And, you know, Bach or Beethoven in their concert versions of this will take 15 minutes over the Gloria. I can't do that. This is a liturgical Mass. It's got to fit into the celebration of the Mass. You can develop the ideas to a good extent, but you can't go on forever. There are confines and there are limits.
Now, you had a slight advantage in that you had already composed a Latin Mass. Was that of any assistance to you?
It was, because apart from anything else, it was written for exactly the same forces as for this Mass, Palestrina Choir. Blanid Murphy, director. So I'm familiar with the situation, the setup in the Pro Cathedral. I have to confess, with the Latin Mass and the Irish Mass, I'm setting two languages that I'm quite ignorant of. But composers, a surprising amount of the time, have to set languages they're not familiar with. So sometimes one gets asked to do this and you just have to rise to the challenge.
When it came to then the Irish language itself, I'm wondering about how different it might be for you in terms of phrasing and tonality to work around the distinct sounds the Irish language has.
The Irish language has very distinct sounds. And the other main difference, of course, between Irish and Latin is that Latin is a dead language. Irish is a living language with lots of different dialects and everybody speaks it differently. So what you have to do effectively, it's the same if you're studying English or French or Spanish. You have to sort of strike a medium of pronunciation to the best of your ability, because you can't accommodate every single inflection. Now, Irish phonetically is quite a complex language. The vowel system is much more complicated than in Latin, but that's what you got to work with. It's quite complicated in English as well, actually.
What could you hear while you were composing?
This is actually a more complex question than people would imagine, because the kind of rubric on this says that the composer hears everything inside their head. Yeah, that's a bit of a romantic illusion. But at the same time, the composer does build up a very precise internal image of what a piece sounds like. And then, with this rehearsal this evening, which is the first time I'm hearing this piece physically, that confronts the reality. And every composer will tell you that this, you know, however prepared you are, can come as a shock, often a pleasant one, sometimes a not so pleasant one. But you build up the auditory image in your head and you take it from there.
Were you surprised?
Not particularly, because I've been doing this so long now that I've got a fair idea what to expect. The way in which it can surprise you is you have what you think are very difficult passages, and even kids like the Palestrina Choir just gobble them up. They can sing them very well. And then you will find passages you thought were not so difficult when you were writing them, and it's a struggle for the performers. And in that sense, you know, they have to rehearse those bits with surprising intensity. And in that sense, as a composer, you never stop learning.
For a composer, there's always the concept of ownership. You own the piece. They're your notes, but you have to hand them over to somebody else. Is that difficult?
It can be. And it's part of the process. Stravinsky, you know, he expressed a great envy of painters. His wife was a painter. And you would go along to the opening of one of her exhibitions, and there was the artwork hanging exactly as she wanted it and as she had envisaged it. He had to go through this process, rehearsing, correcting, saying this beat is wrong, could we make it slower here, faster here, louder here. It's rather like being a playwright. That's probably the nearest comparison. What you got when you finish a script or the manuscript of a piece is basically a working document. It's a blueprint that has to be transferred into this third dimension of sound realization.
Do you have to sit on your hands during the rehearsal?
Sometimes you do. And there's a whole, you know, actual etiquette around this as well. You try not to get into the conductor's hair, frankly, whenever you're at rehearsal. And some composers are better at this than others, shall we say. And the temptation can be there just to leap up and say, no, do it this way. But you work through the conductor. You don't shout directly at the singers or players. There's a way of doing it.
What has this process done for your own faith?
Well, writing masses has come comparatively late in my life. I mean, both my masses now have been written in my 50s. And I'm not sure why it didn't happen earlier, but for whatever reason, it didn't. Perhaps I wasn't ready for it. It's a big responsibility, I think. I mean, these words go back a long, long way. They are archetypal words. And when I'm listening to other composers set them, I think composers have done inspired things. Composers have done things that I don't really agree with. And somehow, in the middle of all that, you, in St. Paul's words, you work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. in relation to making a musical setting of a Mass. It's a big responsibility, but it's a privilege as well.
Kevin, when you're writing this, does it feel like a spiritual experience?
Probably not in the fullest sense of that term. It's in the first place, it's a professional commitment. You want to produce something beautiful and you want to fulfill the commission to the best of your ability. But you are aware of the circumstances that this work is going to be performed as part of the celebration of the Mass. And this brings in the whole relationship between music and faith, I suppose. You know, the Archbishop in Austria who said to Anton Bruckner, who did three very fine settings of the Mass, "Your music is so beautiful that I can't concentrate on my prayers." And, you know, there is always this tension to some extent between the claims of the music and the claims of the liturgy. But what I would say is, I mean, St. Augustine also said, "He who sings prays twice." And what I take from that famous statement is that Augustine is acknowledging that the beauty of the music doesn't have to be a distraction from the prayer. It can be an intensification of the prayer. And that, to the best of my ability, is what I've tried to do here.
Kevin, you'll be sitting in the church for the performance on Sunday. Will you be able to concentrate?
Again, a good question. It's difficult, it's got to be said, because a lot of things go through your head. You know, people say you never enjoy your own wedding day. Premieres are a bit like that for composers. It's sort of a bit too tense, a bit too edgy. That said, I have enjoyed premieres. And the good thing about this premiere is, frankly, there's a bigger purpose to this than just the latest premiere of a new work by a composer. The Mass is a bigger thing. And if this work contributes something to people's sense of the beauty of the Mass, to use the old-fashioned word, the edification of people attending the Mass, I'll be more than grateful.
Well, we've heard from the grown-ups behind this particular event, but what about the young boy choristers of the Palestrina Choir? What do they make of it all?
Hi, my name's Cian. I'm 12 years old and I go to St. Patrick's BNS in Drumcondra. And I've been in the choir for around 5 years now. It's a very difficult piece, but we've practiced it quite a bit now, so we're getting there, and I feel like we're getting closer and closer to succeeding in what we want to do, which is to get it perfect. I'm a soprano in the choir, so I'm singing the highest part, but I switched down a little bit to the second part for a bit of the Agnus Dei, because there's three soprano parts and I'm doing the middle one, so I'm doing it with two other people. There's a lot of jumps in between all the notes. They're not really together, so it's a lot of highs and lows, and it's kind of hard to judge the intervals. And then on the entries, there's also a bit of mix-up between some people's notes because they're all really close together. And some of the chords don't really sound like they're supposed to be together, but they are together, so we have to try and imagine our note in our head. It's really enjoyable to go in and sing and like sing for people and like make them happy. Like, relatives come to the masses and concerts and stuff, and then afterwards you get to see them and smiles on their faces because they're proud of you. It's really, really enjoyable to do.
Hi, my name is Jack. I'm 10 years old and I go to Blackrock College in Blackrock, and I'm an alto in the Palestrina Choir. It's a really great honour to be singing a brand new song from a brand new composer, and it's just like, it's the music's very different. It's not like Bach or Mozart. It's a lot different to the other music that we sing, because we mostly sing Latin and we never really sing Irish songs. We only sing one Irish Mass every year, and that's on St. Patrick's Day, so it'd be nicer to get a few more Irish songs. It just feels kind of like you're blending in with your culture. It makes you feel like that your ancient relatives used to speak this language.
Hi, my name is Cameron Drum. I am 14 years old and I go to Belvedere College in Dublin, and I'm an alto in the Palestrina Choir, and I've been in the Palestrina Choir for 8 years. Right now we are singing the Afrin by Kevin O'Connell, and it is very modern and contemporary, and it's very abstract, but it's nice. It has some really nice harmonies in it, and it's extremely high as well, with a high D flat. It's hard, it's difficult, we make mistakes, but we'll get there. They say a messy dress rehearsal makes a great performance.
Hello, my name's Connor Graham, and I go to Glasnevin National School, and I'm 11. Well, I'm a soprano, but I'm also singing at the very end in the annual stay. This is really high thing, and it's a really high D. But it's kind of fun to sing, because I'm singing it with other people, so I don't feel like isolated or anything. But it is really demanding. Like, we've done a Kevin O'Connell mass before, and it was in Latin, not Irish, so it differs quite a lot. Sunday is still looming, but I'm pretty sure we can get it right before then.
And that's the Leap of Faith for this week. A reminder, you can find details of tonight's programme and indeed details of how to commission a piece of music for yourself or somebody you love on our webpage. That's rte.ie/leap of faith. A quick reminder, bei Afrin atosh scrifta eg Kevin O'Connell, och lushtal an gaid ur majin de downig, eg a heandjag, an ordaglish nevoire im malyahat lia. When you glare in shaw, ihoa.